Welcome to Model Minority Moms, where we talk about the meaning of success in career, family, and life. We are Jeanette Park,
Kate Wong,
and Susan Liu,
Harvard classmates and Asian American working moms who get real about the pressures of fitting in while standing out.
Greetings, greetings, and OMG, welcome back. It's the next episode of Model Minority Mom. That's right. Back to reality. We're back. I know you might be sitting there doing laundry, driving your car, being like, wait, these bitches said that they were ending. And now you're back. What's that about? I assure you, this was not a marketing ploy because we don't got time for that. But we are back and we're so excited to be with you again. It's been about 7 months since we last recorded. And we've been having a lot of conversations in our hiatus, thinking about the loss that we experienced and what we gained from that. And then also what we gained unexpectedly from our listeners, too. So we want to talk all about it and also the shame and the pain of what it means to restart something when it comes to failure. So what up? We back better than ever. Jeanette, Kate.
Well, we've been talking, right? I mean, not talk to each other since the last recording. But yes,
we've been going on seductive lunches one-on-one. And then sometimes as a group where we like hang out and talk about mom life. And then we kind of go, so do you think we could ever like do it again? It was like where you don't stop talking to your ex-boyfriend. But we did our last recording in January-ish. And then what was it like for both of you? Like, were you relieved that we stopped or sad? Like, what was going on in your minds?
It was nice to have the time back. And yeah, I mean, I think there was a little bit of friction among the three of us because we were talking about where we wanted the podcast to go and what we wanted to do and how much each of us could really try to make that vision come to life. And so having that kind of off the table for at least a while was a little bit of a relief. But I also really missed it. I really like having the conversations we were having. And I think I had some hopes of continuing that kind of on my own. But for whatever reason, I think in this stage of life, doing this type of work, I find easier to do with others. And so, yeah, that part of it, I missed. Yeah. But then, you know, like life just keeps on going too, right? Like with, especially when you have kids and something always just going on. So yeah.
Yeah. You always had some big project you were working on with the house stuff. It was just like, living life is such a time suck, right? There's always some new issue.
Right, right.
Yeah. And then, Kate, I remember all of a sudden a lot of space and time opened up for you. And then you and Nirav had a pretty big talk about, like, you had more space to deal with your own stuff, right?
Yeah. I think similar to Jeanette, it was really nice to get the time back because when you're doing something consistently, you don't realize how much time that is until you stop, right? Because you've built it into your schedule. You know, it was really nice to have that time back to spend more time basically reconnecting with my spouse. I think people who have kids, especially, you know, more than one young kid, when they're so young, it's really hard to find time for your significant other, you know, especially because I spent a lot of the past year when I could trying to catch up on sleep. We didn't get to spend that much time together. So I think that was a really good thing that came out of it for me on a personal level is that Nirav and I could really work on our relationship. And then it was also nice because right around then, Leela, my younger daughter, started sleeping more at night. And so I kind of feel like, Susan, I remember we were having this conversation, which you were talking about finishing your book, like editing everything in your book and feeling like you had come out of it, this dark tunnel and you could finally see light. You're like, oh my gosh. And that's kind of how the world felt like to me around the same time. Because again, when you're in a state of like continual sleep deprivation, it's sort of like all you know. Like I think our bodies and minds, you just deal with it, right? You just kind of trying to keep yourself above the water. And then suddenly when the water recedes, you're like, oh my gosh, I can breathe again. How amazing is that? And so there was that whole process for me, which was really good and made me realize how like under the water I had been the past year, you know? Like Jeanette said too, it is hard to have conversations about difficult topics at this stage in life. Like a lot of my really close girlfriends are younger than me, so they don't have kids. They're not, most of them aren't even married. I think they're really interested in knowing about my life, but I couldn't have that, you know, on in the same life stage conversation with them. And then, of course, the irony is that other mom friends that you make, they're also very busy, right? And so, and then like when you get together, it's like you talk about the kids stuff. You're like coordinating play dates. When do you have time to sit uninterrupted to have like deep conversations about all the challenges of motherhood? Like never, because your kids are like screaming in the background, right? I think I did miss that outlet and it was hard to find. You know, I did find a semi-substitute for it, not really though. Like I was on this Asian mom Facebook group and I started like writing a lot in it because I was like, oh, I need to get some of this like pent up energy or thoughts that I had swirling in my head out, right? But it's not really the same, right? Because it's for a variety of different reasons, it's really not the same. So, yeah. How about you, Susan?
Yeah. You know, in January, my editor was like, by George, you did it. You know, she's like, you crossed the threshold. Like, your book is ready. And I was like, wait, no, give me the book back. Let me rework it again. And it was good to have the spring to really put the final touches on the book creatively. And then I got bored and sad. I was like, oh, I wish I had something creative to do. And so I was kind of bummed that we weren't doing it. But I also was like, I should be a better mother. I should have arts and crafts planned. Like, you know, like I was like, oh, this is a great opportunity for me to be a good mom. And then I don't know. I was sad that it was over. But, you know, the whole phrase like different seasons for different reasons and like blessing and releasing and being OK with things ending, like it's a failure on my part, you know, but I it was hard. It was hard for me because I was like, we had a good thing going. But also it's like, we're trying to manage so much stuff. And I remember I had a pain attack in December and I went to the ER twice. And the GI doctor, I went to so many doctors afterwards to figure out what was going on. And we don't really have real answers. But the GI person was like, is there stress in your life? Is there something that you could move away from your life, like remove from your life? And I was like, I knew the podcast was optional. You know, like we're not getting paid to do this. Like, it's a labor of love. We like doing it. It's for us and for the community, but it's not actually necessary, you know? And then so when the opportunity came up for us to end, I was like kind of relieved because then I was like, I really could prioritize my health because when I lost my health in December, it was like pretty bad. But I did feel like this emptiness. And then when we're kind of all reeling, kind of dealing with our own individual lives, we started getting messages from listeners on LinkedIn, Facebook groups, like emails.
Instagram.
It was so beautiful. And I remember on our text thread, we would just keep sharing stuff that we got, you know, individually, collectively, and just like enjoying it. It was like food. It was like breathing life back into me. And we wanted to share some of the comments that the listeners wrote back to us, because I got to say, once we got these love letters and we started enjoying them and relishing in them. And I felt like on our text thread, there was this, like, I had this secret hope that we'd get back together again. We're going to read some of these. We won't say the listeners' names, but we so appreciate these comments. Let's give it a roll. Jeanette, why don't you start?
Okay. So the first one, we got this note that said, I'm quite sad for myself that your podcast is ending. It got me through some tough times last year. And I think you guys are just such unique voices and cover topics other Asian American women won't necessarily touch. Kate, do you want to do the next one?
Oh, you're on mute, girl. Rookie mistake. Not your first rodeo.
Sorry. I know.
Okay. We're getting used to doing this again.
Our next listener said, my road to motherhood has been complicated. I'm not sure what my future holds, but your real talk on the show has at least allowed me not to romanticize the other side too much, which is the very, very easy thing to do as a child-free woman scrolling Instagram. The pictures all look so sweet and cute, and you don't see the temper tantrums or all the exhaustion that goes into everyday life. It's made me feel more grounded and grateful for my present. It's also truly refreshing and empowering to hear Asian Americans stick together their childhoods with their current parenting approaches. I resonated with so much of what y'all shared about how you were raised.
At the time, Art, my son, was going through speech therapy, and I would tell the speech therapist all about our podcast, and then she would share it with all the other speech therapists at their center. And so here's one of the speech therapists, what she said. I love your podcast. It's my favorite soundtrack as I'm driving in between my home visits, and it helps me understand the families and parents that I work with, which we didn't think that was going to be an interested audience, right? About like, we were like, oh, it's moms or people who want to be moms or their partners. But then we started realizing, oh my gosh, all these folks who are part of this caregiving community to help raise children are interested in what's going on. So that was cool.
The next one comes from a listener who sent us a message to Facebook. She says, I'm so sad that MMM ended. It's helped me through my motherhood journey as a new mom dealing with a pandemic baby at the time. Thank you for being vulnerable and sharing your experiences unabashedly. When I had time, I used to do laundry and put on your podcast. It's just not the same anymore.
And our next listener sent us a message on Instagram. We got a bunch on Instagram. Thank you for following us. She said, thank you for sharing your unfiltered selves and life experiences, especially in taboo areas like money, hiring help, Asian family dynamics, abuse, past mistakes, etc. I wish there was a bigger media space for Asian mother issues. But like you said, the ones experiencing it don't have the time to talk about it. I will continue listening to old episodes to help me transition back to work. You all are brave, compassionate, wise, wildly incisive, ballsy as hell, and I look forward to following your success in separate endeavors. Thank you again for giving 2 years of your lives to this podcast. It's needed. It's transformational. Now, if only I could send my husband to Asian Auntie Boot Camp to be trained in running a household and in Asian communication. Until then, we'll chat about your podcast.
You know, not a bad business idea. Good idea. We should do Asian Auntie Boot Camp. And one would be how to feed an army in under 2 hours. Okay. Here's another Instagram message. There were so many topics I was looking forward to hearing your thoughts on. Topics around friendships, romantic relationship dynamics with a long-term partner, navigating the corporate workplace as an Asian American woman, knowing your truth, living with authenticity and integrity. Thank you all so much. The podcast that you created is a labor of love. All caps, everybody. You're my Marvel Supermom heroes. Y'all, we don't have six packs. We have one packs. That's okay. But we have very large biceps from carrying our children. Thank you so much. And here's the last message we wanted to share from another Instagram follower. I loved your podcast so much. Ever since discovering it a couple weeks ago, this podcast rocketed up my listening list to the point where I stopped listening to other podcasts and just went through the entire backlog catalog of your podcast. I've never related to a podcast so much. You guys unpack topics unlike other podcasts because of the Asian American working mom's lens. I never understood podcasts who go on tour with live shows. But with yours, I totally would have bought tickets to see you guys live because I feel like such a camaraderie with you guys. Well, guess what? You have a chance to actually see us do a live recording on Saturday, October 14th in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Yes, at Harvard University. We are going to be doing a live recording at the Harvard Asian American Alliance Summit. And the public is welcome. That's Saturday, October 14th. Once tickets are live, we will put the link in our bio in Instagram. But we are actually doing a live recording and it will be a really interesting full circle experience because the last time we sat in Science Center, the big lecture hall, we were students. And now almost, I guess, 15, 16 years later, we now have the microphone. So that will be a really interesting thing. So yes, you will see us live. And yes, the podcast is back. So listeners, thank you so much for these notes. Like it was savory food for my Asian soul. Like we would share these screenshots on our text thread and it was just, it made me feel so bright for the rest of the day. Like anything, when I was feeling down, I would read these and I'd go, wow, like we mattered. We mattered to somebody out there. And I think when we are recording on Zoom together, it feels, it's one way, you know, like we don't get to actually see the immediate reaction from a listener. Like I'm not sitting with you in your car watching you. So it's hard for me to know that it mattered. But these notes, it was just soul giving. Jeanette, Kate, what was it like to read these notes for you?
I have a question though.
Yeah.
In our decision to come back, what percentage would you attribute to listener feedback versus other factors like us missing it, just, you know, liking to do it, wanting to take another try at it? I would say for myself, it was about 50-50.
Oh, really?
Yeah. What would you say?
I don't know.
I think having the feedback gave me a sense of purpose because it reminded me of why we did this in the first place, even though we ran into a lot of, you know, challenges balancing everything else in our lives, which is that nobody else out there is talking about these topics in such a way with other parents. And so I think it kept me going to explore, like, I mean, a TLDR, but like Nerve and I talked a lot about other ways in which I could stay in that realm, but do different things, right? But I kept thinking of, you know, this is such an important space. Like that kept top of mind for me, because I think without it, I would have been like, well, maybe it's just, you know, what we did, maybe it's just like a fun hobby and like people didn't really care that much about it. But, you know, yeah. And like, even for the people who didn't, you know, we didn't read their comments, but there are plenty of people who volunteer their time to talk to me. Like we have one guy listener, I'll mention his name because I don't think he'll be embarrassed, Way. He's like an avid listener of our podcast. And he spent an hour on the phone with me, just like trying to convince us to try to bring it back in some way. He was like, you guys are lightning in a bottle. You need to continue. I mean, an hour of his own time and during the workday. You know what I mean? And there were other people in varying ways. And I felt really touched that people would take their time, right? Like, because yeah, writing something, it still takes time, right? It takes like, I like this, and then you write it. And so I just felt almost a sense, this is very Asian of me, but like, I felt like we owed it to, you know, our listeners to really like, give it a try again, you know, in a way that's sustainable, though, at the same time to us.
Yeah, the debt.
No, wait, I mean, it's good debt. Like, I didn't feel guilty. It just made me feel like I really want, in my own little way, I really want to be able to be helpful, right, again, to these people. I'm not saying, like, I'm not that important, but I wanted to continue providing that.
Like, playing a role.
Yes, playing a role, yes.
You know, I actually didn't think we were that helpful or interested until I read those notes.
Well, because I felt like, you know, on the internet, people are going to fill any void, you know, and there's just like so much overproduction of content that why does it matter?
But to get such specific, like the impact on an individual listener and get to read that, I was like, wow, like I just didn't know it mattered, you know? And so for me, I was like, oh, that's cool. I think part of me too is just motherhood is such a new frontier for me. And as art gets older, people say, well, next level, next devil, you know, like a kid is always going through it.
Really?
I know. Is that a weird phrase?
Why does everybody make it sound so apocalyptic?
Because sometimes it
I've
is.
I've never heard of that one.
Okay, well, whatever. Some lady told it to me on the street and I was like, yeah. And I'm an external processor and it's been helpful for me to make more sense of the experience by talking with you both, because we're at similar and different phases, and there's just an ease with both of you that I feel really comfortable to share that with. So it's personally beneficial to me as a mom.
Yeah, so I think the listener comments were encouraging. I totally echo what you guys both said. You know, I think whenever you do a project like this, you secretly hope, or not so secretly hope, that you will quote unquote like blow up or something. And we never really experienced that, right? We experienced steady growth and we did really well for a new podcast compared to really the ocean of new podcasts that are releasing all the time. But we never, you know, saw that hockey stick or whatever, right? And so I think there's a part of me that felt like, oh, well, if we're not having that, is this worth doing? But there's two things. One, I was getting a lot out of it. I enjoyed it. And so there was always that sense of, oh, I kind of miss doing it. And then I think, Kate, you said getting the listener comments just felt like, okay, for this community, like for our listeners, we are not totally trivial, right? We brought something. And so, yes, I felt like it was nice to hear. And so thank you for everyone who took the time to write to us. You might not know how much those comments like mean to us and how much they make us feel more connected and make these conversations and what we do more meaningful.
Also, can I just say we're being so Asian about this? I remember I was showing Nerv our stats and he was like, why didn't you tell me you guys are doing so well? I was like, I don't know. I've been telling people like our podcast for a long time. He was like, yeah, but you know, because he's like a numbers guy. He looked at the numbers. He's like, you guys did really well. You should be proud of yourselves for doing this. And I was like, okay, yay. But I don't know. I still feel like there's almost like a, you know, we didn't even take the time to celebrate like, hey, in the midst of the pandemic and all this other stuff, like we, you know, we did this. And not just that, you know, we helped other people and other people like us, but hey, we did something, even if it wasn't like, you know, we weren't like monetizing or like we didn't blow up. But I feel like part of that is there's like this emphasis on blowing up really big or like unicorn companies, right? But I think we did good, right?
I mean, look, we weren't like thousands or tens of thousands or millions and billions and gazillions. And there's such an obsession with like more. I think for me, the introspective moment I had and still have is, what is enough? You know, wouldn't that have just been enough to our own individual impact and the community impact. But I think being overachievers, there was ambition and expectation tied to it. And we would talk about it during our like half day retreats where we'd go out to eat and then like go on a walk by the water and be like, what do we want this to be? And there was still this underlying like achievement that was super attached to it. And also a perfectionism complex for me. Like if it's not a certain size or it doesn't look a certain way, then it's not worth our time. And I think like, how do you know when to start or stop something again? How do you know when to come back to it? This is actually just the ember phase. And I just need to slowly fan the embers right now instead of like, if it's not a roaring fire, it's over. You know, like there's phases to growth on things, and also not necessarily we need to have growth. Like it is actually a capitalistic, white, patriarchal thing to think like, oh, I need this to be more, you know, but it is an ego thing too, right? Like if we're not growing at whatever speed we determined was enough, then it would at times would make us feel bad, you know? So I'm curious about for both of you of just like, did you just around the ideas around perfectionism and achievement, like now that we are restarting, do you have any anxiety about restarting?
Oh, yeah, I feel like that's I don't know if that voice is ever really going to go away, you know? I mean, because I feel like we very quickly like started talking about restarting this. And then there was a lot of project ideas that were brought up, let's just say. And then we quickly went back to the conversation of, wait, we kind of burnt out last time. And like, it was very easy to just kind of get back into the mode of, let's just do more, because why not? And I feel like this is a question that I've been asking myself really basically since my mid-20s, right? So for the last almost 15 years, like how do I think of ambition, right? Because I think ambition got me really far and fast in my high school and college years and maybe sometime after graduation. But then I really hit a point where I felt like I was asking myself, I'm super tired and I don't know why I am going the way I'm going. I think I went through a long stage, and you could arguably say I'm still in that stage where I'm trying to reframe my life and how I think about my work. But that little voice of like, oh, it's not worth it. It's not worth doing it if you don't reach X. If, you know, not enough people or other people are interested in what you're doing. It's not enough that you're just interested, right? Like that voice is a constant. And I think where I am moving towards is that I'm trying to just kind of put that voice in a different place where it was just to say, growth is good and it is desirable in many cases, but like I need to also value myself, right? Which means valuing what I'm interested in, what I find meaningful, and what's sustainable to me and my family. But there's no such thing as a perfect balance. And I feel like it's kind of a tension that I am wrestling with constantly, not just for this show, but in all decisions of how I spend my time.
Yeah, I mean, earlier you were talking about that there's actually some shame around ending things and restarting things. Like you want to give it a go again, but if it doesn't like realize or manifest like your wildest dreams and you know, like the negative voices is this like intense noise pollution in my brain that gets me so anxious and overwhelmed that sometimes I just don't want to do it anymore.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
And it's hard. The reframing, like a part of me, my like bad voice on the one side of my shoulder is like, oh, you're just reframing it because you're lazy and not that good. You know, like it's like a very mean voice being like, oh, so we have to do the reframe exercise. Ooh, design thinking again. You know, like, why can't you just do it really amazingly? Like excellence is such a, it's such a prison.
Yeah. You know, all of us have kind of dipped our toes in different entrepreneurial activities, sometimes more than once. You know, I have experimented with a lot of different creative entrepreneurial ventures since college. And I experienced like a huge amount of shame whenever I chose to shut something down. And what I'm realizing though, is if you look at a lot of entrepreneurs, this is not atypical for them. It's actually good to try a lot of things, fail, like stop doing it and go do something else, right? But I feel like it's both an Asian mentality of just stick it out, right? Kind of a Harvard achievement thing where you did something and it didn't work out, so that's bad. right? And for me, I have some personal baggage on top of that where, you know, I saw my dad try to start a business when I was in elementary school and he got our family into debt. He spiraled into a really deep depression where he literally couldn't get out of bed for like several months. And so, it was kind of traumatizing for me to see my dad go through that. And then my family proceeded to try to pay off that debt for like the next couple of years and really struggled. And so having a childhood family experience related to it, it's doubly hard for me to say that I'm not going to continue with something because it makes me feel like I'm replicating my family's failure. So yeah, I feel like in some ways I just kind of wonder, why am I like this, right? Because I am very interested and drawn to creative entrepreneurial ventures, but there are certain things in my family's past, in my academic and work history that I feel like does kind of make it harder for me. And I'm sure some of that is an interaction with my personality and the way I deal with things. I mean, I think that my evolution has been as much about my mindset and how I think about the projects I pick, you know, when I choose to start them, when I choose to end them, and how I see those things, you know, as much as it has been about like the actual work that I'm doing, if that makes sense. I'm sure some people will see us stopping and starting our podcast as like, oh, there's just, what's that word, like dilettante? What, it's a French word.
Like a dilettante.
Yeah. Right.
What does that mean?
That means like people who aren't serious, right? Like people who kind of dabble in things, leave things when it's convenient for them, come back when it's convenient for them. And sure, there's a way in which you can see it that way. The way I'm going to frame it for myself is like, we had legitimate reasons for stopping when we did. I think there was a lot of like concerns for self-preservation, care for our families and ourselves. And I think now we're in a different place and we could not have necessarily foreseen that. And there's no shame in coming back and making the best decision with the information we have now, which is we feel like in our current stage, we can restart it and we're going to make some changes that make it more sustainable for us.
Totally. And we're going to talk about those changes, but can I go back to the word dilettante? Like, I would love to be dilettante, you know, like it is an ongoing joke with me and Marvin where I just go, I'm chill. I'm so chill, you know, because I'm not chill. I want to be chill. I want to be easygoing, but I'm always like looking for like a way to make it better. Or like, why is this process the way it's? I should give feedback to a manager. And he's like, no, you shouldn't. Just stop. And I was like, but it could be better. And then he's like, you're chill, right? I'm like, I'm chill. Just like, I don't know. Like,
it's compulsive, Susan. I can tell you because during when I started having more time, like a couple months ago, I was telling my friend, I was like, you know, I have time now. I need a new hobby. Like, should I like buy one of these coffee making machines? Because we have a Nespresso, right? And you just press a button. But then I like had coffee at a friend who has one of those espresso like machines. And I was like, ooh, maybe this will be my new hobby since I have time. I even like went online and asked people for recommendations. And then a friend of mine was like, but like, why do you have to do something? I was like, I don't know, because now I have extra time. And they were like, why don't you just like, I don't know, chill. And I was like, that's a good point. But I feel like I should, you know, like do something. So even, and I think of that as like a hobby, like a dilettante hobby, you know, because in the past, you guys may know I've been obsessed with perfumes for a few years. I'd go around like sniffing perfumes and like, you know, like analyzing and all this. And then after that, it was like chocolate. And I actually even like thought about doing a business. So I don't know. I just, maybe it's like this weird compulsion and we can analyze where it comes from to like just need to be busy. I don't know.
Well, I go to plenty of hippie stuff, and I recently went to this thing that I have to tell you a story about. But the hippie workshops are always like, we're not human doings. We're human beings.
You know? I have learned that one. That's a good one. Can we
remember that? That's
a good yeah. one. And I'm like, oh, the art of being, you know, and like not having to like have output, right? And how do I like enjoy the present moment? You know, the presence in the present, all that.
Like, well, yeah, I'm just going to push back. There's like a, this is not my feeling, but this, okay, whenever I've heard that before, and it's like, Jeanette, the person, the whole kind of person feels like, okay, I could kind of see that. But there's definitely a very real part of me that's like, what the fuck are you talking about? Right? Which is, if you think about the role of Asian women historically, we were not allowed to just be.
Chill.
We're just being like, we had to produce, like we had to justify our own existence. You know, you were telling me about a situation with an extended family member where like you know, hierarchy, right? Think about like a young woman in an extended household. Where is she? She is in the kitchen. She is serving food to everyone. She is cutting the damn fruit, right? She is watching the children.
She's like not even on the bottom of the totem pole. She's like the art maker, like drawing everyone else's picture on the totem pole, but she can't even draw her own face.
Or she's like in the ground, right? She's actually like the rock in the ground, holding the whole thing up.
She's a supporting beast.
Yeah, you cannot even see her. Like literally, and I feel like at least in Korean households, like that is not that far from the truth, where this woman would probably not even show her face. She would probably be in the kitchen working, and then just the food would just be carried out, right? So just to point out that I feel like this modern notion of like we're human beings, not human doings, and a more Western notion of like, let's be okay with that, you know, how contradictory really to the core that is to millennia of how Asian women were. We could not just be. We had to do, or we would not survive.
Yeah. I saw a really funny TikTok yesterday. It's basically like Asian moms at the beginning of school, packing a school lunch. Right? And so like the Asian mom literally has like six different things. Like, are you still hungry? Oh, here's some like steamed buns. Da, da, da. And it's all very elaborate. Like there's an ice pack and whatever. And then the next one is like, here's like American mom. And the American mom is like slaps together a sandwich, like lettuce sandwich, and then cuts it, puts it in a lunch bag and be like, oh, it needs to be cold. And then just like, I don't know. It needs more vegetables, and just literally throws a head of lettuce in there. And it was like funny because like, oh, haha, like Asian moms put a lot more effort into, but not funny because like Jeanette said, it's like become a compulsion. It's almost, this is going to be very unscientific, don't kill me, husband, but it's almost like it's been ingrained into our DNA that we have to somehow compulsively always be doing, right? And because we saw our moms, our grandmoms, like other female relatives. And in some way, yeah, it's kind of easy to be like, oh, just chill. But like you're fighting against generations, millennia of like Asian women doing. And it's just not that easy to just be like, chill, you know? It's kind of like telling a new like a mom of a newborn baby, just, oh, sleep when the baby's sleeping, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway.
Who's going to clean the bottles? Who's going to fold the laundry? Who's going to make me my next set of food? Oh, my husband who just went on paternity leave for 2 weeks and wants to come back when the baby's 6 months old because it's more fun.
And, you know, it's easy to say, like, maybe you shouldn't. There are some things that aren't that important to worry about. And I talk about this with my therapist a lot, right? Because, like, half our conversations are about mom guilt. But it's true. Like, you literally have to undo your thinking about what is needed, what is not. And that's very hard. It's not just somebody tells you, oh, don't worry about that. Like, you don't need things to be this way. But love yourself. Do what you want in life. You're like, oh, okay. Thanks. Like, but behind that is this whole, you know, dismantling this architecture of how you're thinking about these. And it's a process, you know, it's very complicated. So, yeah.
So coming back to the podcast, yes, I feel like there's an inner voice that's like, oh, you're coming back? Like, why? Are you like serious? Or how seriously are you taking this project? Blah, blah, blah. Like, is it going to go anywhere? Blah, blah, blah. But I just try to put that voice in its proper place, which is like, these are valid questions. But there are also other valid questions, which is like, how much do I like doing this? Is this a responsible thing to do for myself and those I am responsible to? And if all of those things are, you know, the answer is yes, then why shouldn't I do it?
I gotta say, I doom scroll. The other day we were driving back from Canada and Marvin's like, are you reading about that question I just asked you? And I was like, no, I'm like reading about the celebrity couple's children. And he was like, what? And I was, I do so much dumb stuff on the internet anyways. Like, this is a great use of my time because I get to hang out with you two and someone out there in the world in audio land finds meaning in it too, right? Like, so I need to hold on to that and remember that instead of like just the achievement monster that takes over and like, I don't really like it. Because I never win. I have never won with the achievement monster. You know what I mean? I never have been like, oh, yeah. All right. I'll close the laptop and I'm good. You know, like it never happened. I always, every time I'm done with the day, I'm like, oh, you know? So hopefully, though, you know, this time is different. So anyways, let's set expectations with the listeners on how we are going to run this podcast so that we are putting self-preservation at the top and enjoyment also at the top, and we don't go crazy. So how is this podcast going to be different than in the past?
Well, so I think the main one affecting listeners is that we are going to every other week release schedule. I think we tried to pick a pace that we felt was still consistent, but more sustainable for us. So that's the main thing that's going to be affecting listeners. But on the back end, we are also making some different decisions about how much we choose to edit our episodes. So you might hear some more filler words, as I just say, like about 10 filler words in a row. And we are also going to be outsourcing more of what we do. So some of the editing and publishing work that needs to happen, we are contracting with a team in the Philippines who will help us with that.
It's the art of delegation, right? And it's like, for some reason, we were able to delegate when it impacts like our family, like a collective group, or you can delegate at work because you're allowed to. But somehow these other tasks that were just taking up your time, it was harder to delegate. Was it like, oh, well, I know exactly how to do it. I'll get it done the fastest. Or why was that hard to do, do you think, Jeanette?
I think some of it had to do with, I think some of it is just perfectionism. Like there was a certain way I wanted it to go out every time. And so if that other person didn't do it that way, then I had to spend a lot of time doing it. And so ultimately, then did I just choose to get burned out and then stop the show versus accept a different level of editing, but allow the show to continue? I mean, I think that's one way you could frame a part of what actually happened, right? So, you know, and I feel like that is also a factor in the Asian female psyche, right? Which is everything we do has to be flawless, right?
And it's on me, and I want to maintain control. Sorry.
Right. Yeah. And so at least I'm just speaking for myself. I think it's probably a wider phenomenon, but it's taken me a long time to outsource more at home, more at work, because I just feel like I have to do it, right? And it has to be a certain way. And if it's not going to be that way, then I'm just going to burn myself out, right? So it's taken me a while to think, okay, well, actually, that's not good because, yeah, you're tired and cranky all the time. You're not actually doing the things that are the most important, which is being present for your kids and your partner. So it's taken me a while to kind of go back and rethink. And I feel like that old mindset is definitely still with me a lot. And it's something that I have to be more aware of.
I mean, there's also something just around habit too, right? Like you just get in a rhythm with something and you're like, this is how I'm going to do it. And then the possibility of doing it different is like, that's friction and that's more labor too, to change a process.
Yeah, definitely. That's all to say, you know, we're restarting this. We think we will do it in this different way. I mean, the cadence is pretty much set, but on the back end, I wouldn't be surprised if there's additional adjustments we need to make down the road. But I think all three of us are trying to make a more explicit and a greater commitment to making sure that this is more sustainable for all of us, so that even if we're not doing everything that we want to do, that we have greater longevity and that we could be more consistent. Yeah.
Yeah. I think a big learning thing for me during the time we had off, and I have to credit Susan with helping me think about this, is learning to express my needs and when to say no, and feeling like I'm not letting people down just because I say no, right? I think this is, I don't know if this is just Asian, but this is maybe like a mom thing as well, where when you say no to something, you feel like you're letting somebody down, right? And so I feel like what I was doing for long was just saying yes to everything, but then I couldn't do anything well, or I would just get really bogged down and not be able to prioritize my needs first, right? And I think coming back this time, I've realized that just, especially as moms and Asian women who are kind of have been conditioned their whole lives to just basically like respond to other people's needs, like I need to respond to my own needs first, right? Like, for example, even when we're, you know, when I think about scheduling things, I set a day of the week aside for me where I don't take any meetings, including podcast recordings. That's like my therapy day. That's like my workout day and like other things that are not related to, I mean, sometimes I have to schedule work meetings. It's like I have to, but you know, I that if I have the flexibility, I try not to do those things. And so I think coming in with that different mindset of valuing myself and my time and being able to nicely say no to things that I feel like that important to do right now has been a big thing for me.
Yeah. And it's a subtle negotiation. You know, it's like, would you be okay with that day? Or how about, could I punt the following week? Or
yeah. Or just being open, like, hey, I'm really busy because my kids are off school for 2 weeks. Like, can I get back to you in a couple weeks? Ping me if you haven't heard back. Right. Like, which seems stupid. Like, duh, that seems like a reasonable request. But like before, I'd be like, okay, I have to do it now. And then I get really upset, you know, and resentful and like, you know, yeah.
So. I don't know if that's a woman thing or a human thing. I think it's more a woman thing, probably. All right. So anyways, what's up? We're back. Okay. So the song I started with, I'm going to sing it back again. Back to back, back to reality. Each of you earlier had guessed who sang that song. Jeanette, what was your guess?
I think I guessed like Backstreet Boys or NSYNC, like one of the 90s boy bands.
Kate.
So wait, it's different. I was just thinking it's Backstreet Back, right? Backstreet Boys. It's definitely Backstreet Boys.
Okay, you both clearly don't listen to R&B.
What?
It's called Back to Life by Soul to Soul. Okay, you're both wrong. All right, so come back to reality. That's great. All right, I'm going to wrap it up with an inside thought. Inside thought I thought about this morning. What is your most versatile household object that your kid loves to play with? Like, this thing just has so much life to it. For me, Art loves the laundry basket. He uses it as a car. He puts it on his back and he pretends he's a turtle. He likes to shuttle all his dolls and things from his bedroom and he makes me shuttle it to my bed and then he climbs in my bed and I throw it on top of him. Like, this laundry basket, it does so much more than carry laundry. So that is our most versatile household object that doubles as a toy. What about you two?
Canned food. So
what?
In our pantry, somehow, like when we designed it, the canned food is in a shelf where the kids can reach it. Both of them just love taking unopened cans of food and just taking them out. Like Raya will pretend she's having a food party or whatever. And like Lila will just like chew on it because she's like teething all the time. Well, they're like tins, you know? So it's a big, very popular.
I know, they're tins.
They're very popular. Yes, very popular item in the house.
Wow.
I would say in our household, yeah, laundry basket's a big one. Other two things are blankets. So we have probably currently 6 thin, large blankets just folded up in our living room that are just permanent parts of the living room because my kids, they love to act like they're giant sushi rolls or pillars, or they like to build forts with them or houses or wear them like capes. Or sometimes one will sit on a blanket and the other one will drag the other kid around. Give them rides. So a blanket is a big one. And then I would say the other one is tape, scotch tape. Yeah. My kids use way more scotch tape than I was ever allowed to use as a kid.
I know. It's expensive.
Yeah, it's expensive.
So what do you do with it? Like they just
love, like they use it a lot in their crafts. So they'll make bags. They will, you know, make little boxes or creatures. They will bunch it up, which is probably not the best use of tape. They'll bunch it up and use it like little rocks or like coins or whatever they think. You know, it kind of like make them 3D. So I would say those are two heavily used kids items in our house.
Well, you know, that's inspiration for me. So I haven't thought about doing sushi roll, but we do a burrito sometimes.
Oh, we do burritos. The kids love being wrapped up in a burrito. It's like a sensory thing.
Yeah.
Oh, is that?
Yeah. Like they love the feeling of like just, you know, it's kind of like maybe in their fetal position again or something.
Oh, yeah. I just talked about the toppings that go into it. But yes. All right. So we're back. We're better than ever. So excited to be with you all again. We've got that live recording in Cambridge, Massachusetts, right next to Boston. What school do you go to? A school in Boston. Yeah, but where? Cambridge. So dumb. We used to say that because we're nerds, but we have a live recording in October 14th. It's a Saturday, link to come. And also let's do a smattering of preview of topics to come this season. I mean, we're still duking it out, to be honest. Like we haven't decided, but some topics I want to talk about is to co-sleep or not to co-sleep, back to school and back to problems. Like I just dropped Art off at preschool today and have a lot of feelings around it, but also just like arranging daycare, preschool, all that is just like kind of a very strange thing that needs to be disrupted. What about you, Jeanette and Kate? What episodes are you wanting to put into the pile of what you'd love to talk about?
I think prior to us going on what I'll now call our hiatus, I was thinking about doing like an episode series on modern mom problems. So problems I feel like we face as moms in this day and age where past generations of moms like didn't necessarily face. So one of the things is like how close to live to family, right? But in all senses, like physically, how close should you be emotionally? Once you have kids, I feel like those questions take on a different life. I feel like we are wanting to talk about in-law dynamics in some way, but it's honestly like it's a very sensitive subject, as all of our listeners can appreciate, especially on a platform like this. And, you know, all of us have different dynamics with our in-laws. Like on a different range of issues, it can range from pretty good to maybe not so good, and also changes over time. But maybe through the lens of some context that's like not so personal to the three of us, but we also feel like, you know, it is such a prevalent topic that people talk about between friends, right? And it's also the cause of anxiety and stress for a lot of couples. And so it is something that we are trying to figure out how to talk about. And if you are interested in bouncing ideas off of any of us, or just want to share your story in an anonymous fashion, feel free to reach out to us through our Instagram DMs.
At Model Minority Moms.
Yes.
Yeah, Kate, do you have any topic ideas that you'd be stoked to talk about?
Oh, yeah. I mean, so many. Oh, my gosh. Where do I even start? I think one big thing is like the tricky dynamics with caregivers, right? Like I'm talking about not family, but like nannies, au pairs, babysitters. It's just we are saying goodbye to our live-in nanny of a year because Lila's going to daycare tomorrow. It's her first day. Woo. And, you know, this past year, I feel like I've had a lot of interesting dynamics with her. And it just got me thinking about just the trickiness, right, of someone who is not part of your family taking care of your child. There's pros and cons. Like, as my kids grow older and, you know, they're in bilingual school, and there's a lot of conversation around how to pass down our language and culture of origin. But, you know, sometimes it's not so straightforward, especially if the language / culture is very triggering, which it is for can be for a lot of people. And I think that's really interesting. I think also just outsourcing. It's like a big conversation that Nerva and I have a lot, and we mentioned it in this podcast. Outsourcing, right? Like how, you know, the process of getting there to be willing to outsource, and what do you outsource? How to outsource? And the whole like opening up the conversation around it, because I feel like moms in America today are pressured to do everything. You have to be like super mom, and like people are really embarrassed to talk about outsourcing, or it seems like so privileged, and therefore we are basically stuck doing everything by ourselves, or like secretly hiding and embarrassed about how we like maybe outsource whatever. And I just want to bring it out into the open and make people feel good about making that decision. So those are some of the things that I'm really excited to talk about.
Jeanette, do we still have that form up on Linktree that was it called? No, but really?
Yeah, for real though, that is on our website. So if you go to our website at www.modelminoritymoms.com, then you will see a form in the main navigation that says contact us or for real though, and you can drop us a line there as well.
Yeah, with different topic ideas, we'd love to hear what our listeners would love for us to talk about. All right, that's all she wrote. Remember, back to back. Anybody?
I want to say back no. to back. All right. Which it is a Backstreet Boys song.
I know. It is the Backstreet.
No, that is not the line.
No, it's Backstreet. All right. That's what you're thinking.
Okay.
About.
Sorry.
Okay. All right. See you all later. Bye.
All right. Bye, guys.
We hope you found something helpful, reassuring, or interesting in this episode of Model Minority Moms. If you enjoyed the episode, please help us spread the word by texting a friend about our show or leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. If you want to connect with us, please visit our website at modelminoritymoms.com or follow us on Instagram, where we love receiving messages from our listeners.